Happy Wednesday out there, Virginia fans. Welcome to the Hard Hedge, independent year-round coverage of Virginia basketball. I'm Mike Pittman, a.k.a. at Wahoo Basketball. Thanks so much for joining us tonight on this ACC tournament edition of the program. They are underway in Greensboro, my friends. Co-hosting, as always, the world-famous Phony Bennett. Phony, hope you're doing great, buddy, and I can't wait to hear about this first guest you lined up tonight.
I am great. I'm a whole lot of things tonight because this is the beginning, like the first day after Thanksgiving. We've got the conference tournaments and then the big one. This is what it all leads up to. So I'm nervous because things are slowly coming back together, and this isn't quite where I expected us to be a few weeks ago, but I'm very optimistic. And someone else who's very bullish on Virginia basketball is our guest tonight. When I announced on Twitter that he was coming on, I got a whole lot of positive feedback, and so I think folks are excited about that. He's a writer for Grantland. He's a former walk-on at The Ohio State University, which you can read about in his book, Don't Put Me In, Coach. You can find him on Twitter, at Club Trillion, and perhaps most importantly for all of us, he's been carrying our torch the whole season. So introduce Mark Titus to the Hard Hedge. Mark, I'm glad you could join us tonight.
I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very excited that I can carry the torch for Virginia basketball. It didn't originally start like that. That wasn't my goal. I wasn't like out to give a voice to the like underdogs or whatever, but I've kind of settled into the role nicely, and I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying going to bat for the Hoos because I do come from a real place of like where I love watching Virginia play. This isn't like an act that I'm putting on just to be like a contrarian against all these other people who call Virginia boring and all that. Like, I really do enjoy it, and then it's fun to see me, you know, make a comment, and then all these Virginia people will tweet back at me. Or I told my wife at one point, there was a stretch there for a few weeks where I told my wife if I click on new followers on Twitter to see who's following me, like the first 100 pictures are going to have something to do with Virginia. It's going to be some sort of Virginia logo or something. So it's been pretty fun. I might pander a little bit here and there, but about 95% of everything I write comes from an honest-to-God place. So
I imagine you can get some pushback, and then you might get into a defensive position. So since you're talking about that, when did you start watching Virginia? Is this like this year, or had you seen us, you know, as Tony's been kind of building things?
Yeah, I've kind of followed the rebuilding process a little bit. I stick with the teams. Like, my job, I'm supposed to watch, like, the teams that I think will contend for national titles. So last year, I definitely followed a lot of Virginia. The year before, not so much. Not that they were bad, but just that, like, weren't really figuring into the national title picture so much.
Right, yeah.
But then this year, I mean, like, I got on the bandwagon early. It kind of blew me away. Like, I liked Virginia last year, but then early on there was something, I wish I could pick out which game it was, but there was something about, like, it was a really early season game, and I saw Virginia, like, helping the helper's helper's helper.
Right.
And I just had to pause. I swear to God, I paused my DVR, and I just, like, called my wife, and I was like, babe, you got to watch this. And she's like, I have no idea what I'm looking at. And I was like, it's okay. Just watch it and pretend like you do know, because this is amazing what's happening right here. So
I love that you brought your wife over for Virginia basketball. That's outstanding.
I'm trying. I brought her down to Charlottesville for the game. So she definitely, outside of Ohio State, I think that might be her team. That's, I'm trying to get her on the bandwagon, and because she doesn't really know much about basketball. So it's good to watch Virginia games so I can pause them and kind of show her actions and stuff and show her, because I don't know, Virginia's probably the best team to use to teach somebody stuff about basketball. So.
Yeah, and unless you're really looking out for individual things, I mean, sometimes I know Mike's done that before during games. We'll point out, like, okay, on that last play, back up and watch how, you know, Darion comes out the hedge and then gets back, and the health defense is sliding. I mean, and, you know, once people start paying attention to that, I think that appreciation can grow quick.
Right, and for me, that's Virginia. I'll say this about my colleagues who have been saying Virginia's boring and stuff. It's very easy to tell which writers and which talking heads and which whatever like basketball, and it's easy to tell which ones like being talking heads and writers.
Thank you.
Makes sense. The ones who say Virginia's boring clearly do not like basketball. They like basketball. They do not appreciate basketball. They're not basketball people. And I have no shame in saying that. Like, I would say that to their face. I have said that to some of their faces.
Well, and I suspect a lot of them are just looking at box scores. They haven't actually seen Virginia play.
Right. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, like, that's their job. Some guys have, like, more of a broad job where you got to cover five or six different sports, you know, and, like, just, you don't have time to really sink your teeth into college basketball. This is all I do. I mean, I dabble in some stuff in the off season, but pretty much I make my money and bread and butter my bread with college basketball. So I've discovered that. I've learned that really over the course of this season. I've learned which guys are like basketball people and which guys are just like sports people who kind of watch college basketball because it's their job and they're not really into it. And they just kind of, I don't know. That's just the assignment that they've been handed. So,
well, it's been great to see the coaches respond to it. And obviously, you know, other folks that really know basketball, they all echo your sentiments and they take it to the, you know, nth degree. That, you know, this is a team game that's designed on five guys on the floor working together, and that there aren't many examples at any level that do it like Virginia does. And I guess
he does it better.
I guess
does it better.
Why? I mean, should we even be worried about the quote unquote casual fan? And Mark, in your opinion, are ratings down? Is there any indication to even show that this is going to affect the popularity of college basketball?
I don't really follow ratings. I'm not really into that. I'm into the basketball, so all the other stuff doesn't really matter to me. I will say that for me, and this is important to me too, the one thing I would like to say to like Virginia fans is don't necessarily, when you're fighting the fight for the Hoos, don't attack the other point of view. And that we can all say that like Virginia's fun to watch, and they are. But in making the point that Virginia's fun to watch, don't like crap on Duke and say that like playing fast is fun. Because I enjoy watching Duke play too. I mean, I'm not saying you should cheer for Duke. I'm just saying
I like teams of all speeds as long as they're efficient.
Right. Right.
Efficiency has become something that it's very important to me as a fan. And slow or fast, that's no good if they're not efficient.
The one thing I've seen with Virginia, some Virginia fans, and this is not an attack on the fan base. It's just a commentary that. To stick up for your team, sometimes you attack like the other day, and you're like, the NBA sucks, your team sucks, our team.
Right.
And instead of doing that, let's just try to get people to appreciate what you're doing. But yeah, the whole stylistic difference is, to me, what makes college basketball so great. And all this talk about like changing rules, I'm all for changing rules. I'm all for making a more exciting product. But I just don't want to neuter the sport to the point that it kind of becomes a everyone runs the same sort of stuff and every team is kind of the same. I mean, that's what makes college basketball so awesome, because you can have a team like the Virginia VCU game is a perfect example where VCU is trying to score 2,000 points and go up tempo. Virginia's trying not to necessarily. And just to watch two teams with different styles try to impose their will on each other, that's what makes the sport great. It's not about necessarily who has the best players, which Virginia does have great players. And we can get into that too, because that bothers me when Virginia's treated kind of like a gimmick, like they're just trying to like muddy up things and then maybe steal a win at the end, which is definitely not
right.
But the whole stylistic thing, I love that. So I don't know. I feel like maybe casual fans are turned off by Virginia, but what makes college basketball great is if you don't like Virginia, there's 350 other teams to choose from. Go find someone else you do like. That doesn't mean we should get rid of like the slower and Virginia's not even slow. I'm getting so worked up right now.
Keep it going. Let it out. You're in a safe place.
Virginia, like you said, Virginia's not even slow. They're just efficient. Like if they could get an easy basket in the first 5 seconds, they're taking it.
Right.
So it's just, I don't know. I have gotten worked up about this. I really hope this summer. I know that all the rage is changing rules, shorting shot clock, which I think is funny because I think it's been pointed out many times over that shorting a shot clock against Virginia just gives teams less time to figure out defense.
Exactly.
So, I'm for rule changes. I want the game to be more exciting. I do want casual fans to be more into it, but at the same time, I'm worried that maybe we're going down a path where, like, they're trying to get rid of Virginia's style, which to me is not a good idea. So
yeah. Oh, go ahead, man.
I was just going to say that was, you know, Tony commented on this briefly, and that's the exact point that he brought up, is that what he loves about college basketball is the, you know, massive contrasting styles that make it a great game. And Dick Bennett, his dad, said that, in his opinion, that the NBA has the players and the college has the game.
Right.
and that's the way he's always felt, and I couldn't agree more.
Right. That's pretty much word for word what I would say too, is that I watch the NBA to watch the players. I watch college to watch the teams and the systems and the programs. So, I'm right there with you guys.
Yeah, and talking about the rule changes, like I think I've put it out there, I'm in favor of shortening the shot clock because, like you said, I think it helps us. It creates possessions. Does that get fans more involved? If it adds possessions, then fine, but I think it benefits us. And fewer timeouts. There's 18 timeouts in a game that uses all of them, and that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, the timeout thing is the big one for me, too. Especially you get those situations where you have the media timeout comes, like the under 12, and someone calls a timeout with like 11:37 to play. And then so we go to commercial, and then we come back from commercial, and a foul is immediately called. And so we go to another commercial, and that kind of stuff just like grinds the game to a halt. The reviews drive me crazy too towards the end. I mean, I'm all for reviews. I want to get the calls right, but like sometimes it takes like 2 seconds to see what happened, and these guys got to talk it over and figure stuff out. And which, by the way, that creates another timeout too, which I had this idea, and I haven't seen anyone write about this. I haven't even written about this. When we have these reviews and like we give teams extra timeouts, how hard would it really be to just make the team, each team, like stand on the opposite side of the half court line so they can't meet in a huddle? And that's part of what takes so long, is that these teams huddle up and then the refs have to go break up the huddle when there are reviews. Like make each team stand on the opposite side of half court so they can't meet with their coach.
That's a great point.
Is that really that hard to implement? While the refs are talking it over, so maybe they can still talk to their coach, but they're not huddling up. And then that way, when the review's over, we don't spend another 2 minutes whistling and saying, all right, break it up. No, seriously, I mean break it up. No, seriously, I'm going to have to do, and I don't know. But, yeah, the timeouts drive me insane. That is the one thing that I completely am on board with.
No, here's what you do. You give each coach a challenge flag. I've seen this before. You give them each a challenge flag. Two successful challenges per game. Every one they get wrong, they lose a timeout. And that's an awful idea.
You know what I do like though with the timeouts is the FIBA rule of no timeouts during a live ball. I'd be interested. I don't know if I like that, to be honest. I am intrigued by that, I should say.
I saw somebody mention that yesterday, and I haven't really considered, okay, where would that impact things? I guess when you're trapped and you need a timeout, but that wouldn't be a big deal.
You know what it would impact is one trend that I've seen, and there's no way to really legislate against this, is micromanaging by coaches. That's become kind of a problem, that like coaches don't just let the players like Virginia does a good job of doing that, and I've made that comment before that like it looks like Tony doesn't even say anything because his guys are like so well prepared, but coaches don't teach the players what they need to be done and then just turn them loose during the game. It's like a micromanaging as the game goes on. So you're calling timeouts in all these situations, and that kind of grinds the game. So you get in those situations where there is a minute left, you don't have a coach calling a timeout every single 5 seconds to draw up a play, and then something happens. Okay, now we need another timeout because the situation has changed, so let's draw up another play. And then you should focus on getting the guys ready to play and then just turning them loose. That would be one thing that would eliminate if you made them timeouts only during dead balls.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's all those timeouts compressed together right at the end, I think, is most of the problem. I mean, there's also the problem, the TV timeout followed by a regular timeout. But what if you just limited the number of timeouts they could take, like at the under four? Like any called timeout takes away a TV break earlier in the game, and then after it passes under four, teams have maximum of two timeouts. Because, I mean, that's what you hate to see. I mean, we almost saw, what, 4 or 5 in the last 12 seconds last night.
Right.
Yeah, but Phony, they're gonna maximize that ad revenue however they can. They're,
right.
They like the fact that they get that extra timeout.
I know. That's what, man.
Now, the reviews are the worst. Let's go back into UVA a little bit more if we can, because our listeners are going to be mad if we just talk big picture stuff. Where do we want to go from here? We're trying to recover. Things didn't quite go our way in the last game, and you can say, okay, well, Justin's out. Since he left, our offense has looked sluggish, but we were, what, 7-1? Is that what we finished at without Justin? You know, and I'm just wondering, you know, what's going to, how quickly it's going to take him to come back. Because, you know, my honest opinion is I don't see us making much of a run without him in the tournament.
Yeah, I would actually agree with that. I think Virginia, they should be fine to make the Sweet 16 without Anderson. Which, by the way, that's kind of like a blessing and a curse. It's like it sucks for this season, but there was the fear. There was a moment where it was like obvious he was going to go to the NBA, and now maybe he's coming back for next year. So it's kind of like, okay, so this year kind of sucks, but maybe next year we're better off. Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with everything you hit on, that I think the Hoosiers are still fine without Anderson. Like, they can still win. They can still be competitive, but I don't think they're national title good. The offense, I actually just wrote about this for my column tomorrow, that the offense, like, they still move right, but there's just not that playmaker to, like, they get to the right spots, but then when the ball gets to the spot, it doesn't, you don't have Justin Anderson saying, all right, now I'm 6'6 and 230 pounds and I'm going to dunk on you from the spot. You know, you, so,
Well, in that respect, Justin's really taken over for what Joe did for us last year, which is kind of, you know, being that straw that stirs the drink, the guy that's keeping the whole offense moving and keeping us from getting stagnant.
Right, right. And without him, I mean, Brogdon can only do so much. At some point, you do need guys you can just give the ball to and say, hey, we need you to do something here. And I don't know. I mean, if Brogdon's the only guy, I was kind of hoping Parentes would step up a little bit. He's has-ish. Maybe not as much as I was hoping, but yeah, the current way things are going, I don't know. I just don't think they do have enough. Just get the ball, go in those situations where the shot clock's maybe running down, or because you can only I don't know, X and O so much. At some point, you need, what is the less about the X's and O's and more is about the Jimmys and Joes or whatever.
Right.
Older coaches say, yeah, sometimes you need the Jimmys and the Joes to put it over the edge. So.
Well, Justin, more than anything, you know, on a team that really doesn't have a whole lot of high-volume talented shooters or three-point shooters, definitely. I mean, you know, 50% on the volume of threes he had been shooting this year was right. Just astronomical and really created a lot of space for the other guys to operate. You know, it's simple. Even if he comes back, do I think he shoots at a 50% clip, taking a month off? You know, I don't think that's likely, but I think at least he provides that threat to help open things up for the rest of the guys. And
right.
He's such a dynamic playmaker, and he's also a guy that is not afraid of the moment in any capacity. And when you get into postseason play, you know, that's the kind of guy you need out there. Even his freshman year when he shot 22% from three or something like that, the threes he did hit were late in games, and they were huge clutch threes. You know, he is just a guy that has kind of the heart of a lion, and you need those guys in March.
I completely agree. Do we know his timetable, by the way? I haven't really been following that.
You know, they didn't announce anything today. He practiced lightly yesterday. Tony yesterday said he hoped he'd be available for Thursday. It depends. I guess there was a doctor's appointment today, but I haven't seen anything out, and they normally play it pretty close to the vest. But, yeah, if they're talking about him maybe playing Thursday, I mean, that's pretty good to me. I mean, even if he doesn't, that's
– To me, that means he's definitely going to be there for the NCAA tournament, which at this point – I'd love to see us win the ACC tournament, but you know this all comes down to the NCAA tournament for me. So if they're saying that he's a possibility for Thursday, then I'm feeling pretty good that a couple Thursdays from now he'll be able to go.
Yeah, I love that attitude. Before last year, we'd won one ACC tournament, 76, and then we win last year, and now this year it's like, we don't need the ACC tournament.
Hey, man, when we've spent the entire season in a top five, essentially, I got right. Bigger goals for March, brother.
I think Virginia's got a one seed locked up too. So I mean, I don't think the ACC tournament's really. I don't know. But I
was going to ask you that. What do we need to do to hold on? I mean, like, I'm a little bit worried just from everything I'm seeing. What if we lose to Florida State or Clemson, or that we can drop it?
I think if you lose the first game and Anderson's status is in doubt, if they're still wondering if he's even going to come back at all this year type stuff, they might be in trouble. And I think even then, Arizona's going to have to win out. Wisconsin's going to have to win out, which Wisconsin probably will. The Big Ten is. I've been following the Big Ten this year, and it's not great. So a lot of things have to happen for Virginia to drop it, and I can't see. I mean, if you win the first game, I can't imagine how Virginia could lose a one seed. And by the way, before I forget, like the one thing I thought about with Anderson that's interesting is that Evan Nolte is kind of playing well, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting, like, what role he'll have, because – I don't know. He there was that stretch, like he got minutes early in the season. ACC comes around. He kind of never really got out of that slump, and he just kind of his minutes dwindled. And then now Anderson's out. He's kind of it took him a while to figure it out, but he's been playing well recently. And I'm interested to see what's going to happen. I don't know when Justin comes back.
Yeah, you'll still see him get lost on defense every now and then.
Right.
But he's been shooting better, and I feel bad. He and Mike Toby take so much heat from the fans, which I think is just the worst thing. I mean that fans somehow have the right to go after the players like the way they do. But I'm glad to see him shooting well. He's playing better defense than he was last year.
Oh yeah, Tony's been very bullish about Evan's defense over this stretch without Justin, though. And, he used to be a fouling machine, mainly because he couldn't move his feet really well. But old Mike Curtis has helped him laterally. And, he's played great. But I think all that does is provide us another weapon off the bench if Justin does come back. And, if, God forbid, Justin can't, that experience is going to do nothing but help Evan in the tournament.
Yeah, I mean you're not playing Evan for defense anyway, and
right.
So he could shoot, and if he's shooting well, then and at this point he doesn't have to be a great defender. He just has to not be a liability, and I think he's gotten to the point where he's not necessarily a liability every time down the court. I don't think teams are like, all right, go at him, go at him, go at him, go at him, like maybe they would have been in the past. So
absolutely. So from an X's and O's standpoint, Mark, let's say that you're coaching against Virginia, obviously. I think we're all in agreement that the best way to beat the pack line, quote unquote, is to just simply shoot over top of it. But if you had to draw up some plays, other than referring to Bob McKillop tape, what would you do to attack the pack line?
Well, the first thing is transition is huge, and Virginia does a great job of getting back and limiting transition. But that Duke game, I was at that Duke game, and that was
I still don't understand how that happened.
Yeah, Duke killed him in transition, man. And I think, like, it's easier said than done, but if you can get the ball at the floor before they get the defense set, and that's true of every defense, really. Get the ball at the floor before it gets set, you can have some success. But yeah, they're definitely raining the threes. I would say specifically the big man, the stretch fours, the fives, even in, like, a team like Wisconsin's case where, like, Frank Kaminsky can shoot threes. I don't know. I think that becomes a problem, especially like the hedging the ball screens and stuff, the picks and pops, and specifically like the second half of that Miami game. I forget who that kid on Miami was. That was just like he must have hit. It felt like 10 straight threes from the top of the key on pick and pop actions.
Right.
Yeah, freshman.
Yeah. I think that sort of thing in particular can get Virginia in some trouble. But yeah, I mean, they do a great job, man. They are really, really tough, and that's what makes them so good is that it's like it is a system that makes the defense good, the pack line, versus like a Kentucky, which is more of they have a good defensive principles, but it's more of just we're 7 feet tall and athletic, and that's how we shut you down. And if you can move the ball on Kentucky and screen them a little bit, you can have success. But with Virginia, it's really, really tough to do that and to penetrate on that. It's really tough to penetrate. It's tough to even do much of anything. So, I think the first thing is transition. The second thing is threes, which is pretty much what Duke did for 40 minutes, and that's how they pulled the upset. But
well, you know, it's funny because we put it out on Twitter, like, okay, send us your questions. We'll ask Mark one of the questions. And the one I was going to ask you, and so we'll get your definitive answer here. Clayton Tyler asked, what is deadlier versus the pack line, Kaminsky like big who can shoot or an Iverson like guard?
Oh, I think the Kaminsky for sure. I mean, it's not always the case, but I think Virginia does a good job with penetration. I think penetration is something you can even fix on the fly. Like if someone's getting burned off the dribble, Tony can call timeout and say, here's what we're going to do to fix this. There's really no defense if guys are just raining threes from, 25 feet away, and you've got a team full of – I keep going back to Duke just because that's the one game that they were full strength at and lost. I keep going back to that game. Like, if you got a team like Duke where you got four shooters who can shoot from NBA range, and then you got a big dude in Okafor who demands a double team, there's really nothing you can do about that. So I definitely think it's three-point shooting. And the bad news for Virginia is that teams seem to get – like, some magical thing seems to happen in the NCAA tournament to teams. But the good news is that teams that rely on three-point shooting can also, just go cold and – get shut down. So, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, that Mataglu kid or whatever his name is, I'm sure I'm pronouncing it incorrectly, but for Wake Forest, just
the Greek Deke.
Yeah, absolutely destroyed us too. And I agree with Mark completely. I used to think that those super quick guards, but it was really a personnel thing for Virginia that we had some. Our guards had a little trouble defending those super quick guards. This season, I really fear those four men that shoot from the perimeter, because we're out there hedging so hard. The pick and pop we're really susceptible to. We struggled a little bit against the high pick and roll as well. Yeah. With those type of guys. I definitely agree with Mark that if I see a stretch four man that's a 40% 3-point shooter on our NCAA path, I'm gonna be worried.
That's what I worry about, like those, you know, 16-1 games or 15-2, wherever we end up, because, you know, a lot of those teams, they end up making it because they got a couple guys that can just stroke it from outside, you know, and that's like the one reason they made the postseason in their conference tournament, and that's what scares me.
Yeah, but we should be able to score on those guys at will ourselves.
Right, yeah, you'll be fine. I don't know. We'll see. I say that, it's March Madness, who really knows, but you should be fine.
Yeah, I mean, what did the other team, was it Coastal Carolina, did they lead at the half last year against us?
I think so, or it was close. I can't remember the score at the half, but you know who the savior in that game was?
Nolte, right?
Evan Nolte.
There you go.
And people don't talk about it that much, but even going back to his first year, he wasn't hitting a ton of threes, but he had so many threes at big moments, like where, okay, the other team's getting some momentum, we really need to do something, and everyone just seems lost, and Nolte would be the one to hit the three. And, you know, I think he doesn't get enough credit, and, you know, because he hasn't been getting a lot of time, he hasn't developed rhythm, but now that he's getting to play more, he's getting better. So I guess maybe that's another silver lining in those injuries.
Yeah, I think a lot of that too is when you do get to play more, every shot doesn't matter so much, and you can be more relaxed. You can miss and know that you'll have another shot coming 5 minutes later. It's not like all right, Evan, you got to hit this one, and if you miss, you're back on the bench, and then maybe there's some pressure going into that shot. Which I've kind of been in similar situations in my life as a right. Not playing a lot, as a guy who sat on the bench a lot, where this is your one shot to make something happen, and if you blow it, you're back on the bench. And now he knows that he's going to have more time to, you know, make up for a missed shot here or there. So he seems more loose and playing a lot better, certainly.
Yeah, I've enjoyed seeing Isaiah Wilkins' development over this time, because he seemed to get a few more minutes. You know, and he's one of those guys that I think, well, next year is when I think he's really going to come on, you know, once he adds on some weight and a little more strength. But he just, he's really picked things up quickly, which has been a surprise, because I don't think that's an easy defense for those guys to learn.
I'm really excited about his future. I think he's got a lot of the fundamentals down. You know, he's wise beyond his years in that regard. And I think once he gets a little more comfortable, he's going to be a force, and he's got to get in the gym, but I really like how he's developed.
All right, well, we should probably, let me see. We didn't talk about time here. Mark, how are you doing on time?
I'm doing fine. I got nothing going on. I'm watching these conference tournament games, pretending like I really care, either one way or another.
Right, well, I've got Green Bay on, because that's Tony's alma mater.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
Yep, let me ask you another question, X's and O's, Mark. I love talking this basketball with guys like you. If you looking at Virginia's personnel, we've been up and down against the zone. How do you think we should utilize our personnel against the zone, and what have you seen against the way that Virginia has attacked the zone? What should we possibly do differently?
That's tough. You put me on the spot here.
How many beers have you had, Mark?
Yeah, right. I don't know. I mean, I haven't really like broken it down that far and really paid attention to it that much. I like Justin Anderson in the middle. I saw some of that. I like Justin doing the rovering kind of in the middle, kind of working the short corner and the high post a little more so than like spotting him up from outside and just kind of moving the ball around, that sort of thing. I like Justin in the middle. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, we definitely seem to have a lot more activity with Justin in there, which I guess we kind of touched on earlier. But, you know, he's got the versatility that I think helps us to get a mismatch against the zone.
Yeah, right. And I think the tendency the team fought, and Virginia knows this as well as anyone, that the team, that what zones are trying to get you to do is just pass the ball around the perimeter and shoot three. So I think it's important to have a guy. And the other bigs, you know, Gill and Atkins, certainly, and Toby, certainly can make something happen in the high post. But I think having a guy like Justin who is, can actually turn and make a play and do all sorts of stuff, working the ball in the middle like that, working the short corners, that sort of thing, is definitely the way to go versus, you know, keeping him outside and maybe trying to just move the ball around the perimeter and jack threes.
Yeah, I'd like to see more activity on the ball in general. I think we get a little bit into the, you know, pass and pass, hold, look, pass, hold, look, pass, hold, look. And, you know, when you do that against the zone, all you're doing is giving them all the time in the world to recover. So, yeah, flashing one of those guards, and sometimes they do it with Brogdon too, moving him into the high post, getting them in a triple threat position right there in the soft spot of the zone. Every time it seems to open something up, and yet we don't seem to do it consistently. We seem kind of okay with just moving around the perimeter. So I hope
we'll
see more zone. So
yeah, you want a guy in the middle who can actually do stuff. And I think a lot of what a lot of teams will do is they'll send someone into the middle who looks like he can do stuff, but he can't. You'll send like a big guy in there, and he'll catch it, and then okay, now what? Now we're just going to back off and dare you to shoot, or now we're going to make you put it on the floor and we'll steal it or something. Or you put a little guy in there and you crawl up on him and make him finish over a big guy or something like that. So to have someone like Brogdon or Justin who can actually do something, do multiple things. They can catch it, turn, and hit. They can catch it, maybe step out to the three-point line and hit if they're open. They can drive to the hole from there. Having guys like that who actually are versatile and not just give off the illusion of being versatile is a huge deal. And I said, again, we're going back to, we need, and Virginia definitely needs Justin Anderson back to really succeed in this tournament. So
I'd love to see Mike Toby decide that he wants to be ACC tournament MVP. You know, I swear sometimes, I mean, he's two different players out there, and he comes out and just doesn't seem to have his head in the game, to be frank. And then when he's tuned in, though, he can be so dominant. And, you know, I swear if he just said, okay, you know what, I'm gonna be tournament MVP, he could accomplish something.
If he played Harvard, what, three games in a row, he probably would be, right? That first half of Harvard, I couldn't even believe that. That was the Harvard game, right?
Yeah, like the first 4 minutes, I think he had 8 or 10 points or something.
And then he got tired and asked for a sub. And yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, I'm not going to pretend to follow Virginia as closely as you guys do. I watched all the marquee games. I've probably seen 20, 25 games this year. But yeah, I kind of noticed the same things. Like, I'll watch and Toby looks great. And then in my head, I'm thinking, like, Toby is, he might be the guy for the Virginia. And then I'll look up a box score of a game I didn't watch. I'm like, what happened there? How did that? I thought he was the guy. What happened? I believed in this man. So, I don't. I think that kind of comes with just learning. I mean, I don't know. It's college basketball. These guys are figuring it out. Sometimes you're, and the thing to keep in mind too. I always say this about college basketball players, and you have no idea what's going on in their lives. Maybe he has a hard. Maybe he has a hard test. Maybe he got dumped by a girlfriend. Maybe he was really close to beating his high score on Donkey Kong and failed. That's about. Like, these guys, I've been around it enough to know that, like, the littlest things can affect play here and there. And so who knows? But I think
if everyone just remembered that these are people.
Right.
Very
right.
Young people at that. I just think they need to go easier, you know, on these
right.
folks. I mean, I you know, they're not getting paid. they're not, like, living some kind of life of luxury or something where you can yell at a coach and say, okay, he's getting $2 million a year. But I just, you know, I really like Mike. I keep thinking, okay, this is going to be the time when he really turns that corner and makes that step. Now, under Tony, we've seen that happen in the fourth year for a lot of guys. I mean, Darion, certainly, I don't know that everyone saw this year coming for him. You know, Akil had such a great year last year, so maybe next year is going to be Mike's year where he turns it on.
Well, he just got voted coach of the or sixth man of the year by the ACC coaches. You know, I think that shows that guys around the league know that it's not too many 7 foot guys that you can bring off the bench that have the offensive ability that he does. I think a lot of the criticism he gets always goes back to his physicality, and that's something that unfortunately not everyone is just born with. You got to kind of learn it. And, you know, I think he's going to have a big senior year. And, you know, I don't count him out here for the rest of the season. I think he'll have a big impact on a couple of these games.
I think at this point with Toby, too, it's kind of like you have to have more realistic expectations. That's not to say that like you should not expect him to be good, but I say this about Caleb Tarzewski at Arizona, who looks like he could be a top five pick. Like if you just look at his physique and how he kind of moved, you're like, this dude is a monster. He could be great. And then if you really get, if you become like an Arizona fan and kind of watch him a lot, you would get frustrated with why can't he do this better? And it's like, he's still good. You're just expecting him to be Jahlil Okafor or Frank Kaminsky. And if you just instead said, I hope he's a serviceable center who can provide surprisingly great moments, you'd be very satisfied with what Mike Toby is at this
point. Yeah, I think when people saw his touch early on in his career, they set the expectations really high. There's no doubt in my mind that he's improved every year he's been there. So, I mean, I'm a big fan of his, but, you know, I think people are kind of rough because they just have exactly what you're saying. They expect him to be way up here, you know, Sean Bradley or something. And, you know, he's not there yet. I don't know if he can get there, but that's a kind of lofty expectation.
Sean Bradley reference, nice.
Am I dating myself?
So, Mark, let's talk. Let's talk about your picks. I guess let's see.
Yeah.
Who do you think? I'm not going to put you on the spot here, but give me some teams you like for the Final Four, and give me some surprise teams that you think might really make some damage in the tournament.
So I like Kentucky in the Final Four.
Wow, that's bold, Mark.
Let's start there. I think Kentucky, it's, I mean, Virginia fans don't want to hear this, but Kentucky is much better than everyone else. I don't want to hear it.
There's no doubt. I mean,
I really do think it is. Like, I think a lot of people are trying to make this more of a discussion to come up with ways to like make this a fun discussion. Like, is Kentucky or the field? Could maybe some teams beat Kentucky? Like any team could beat Kentucky. Kentucky could lose the first round. Honestly, it's basketball. You never know what's going to happen. But Kentucky is so much better that like I would honest to God be kind of shocked if they did not win the national title, which is like the first time I've ever said that about any team. So
well, how do you explain the times where they've had these close games? I mean, that's a couple overtime games, a couple teams that tested them. Was it just a matter of, is that an effort thing for them or what?
Partly effort, but yeah, I mean, like I was saying earlier, you can move Kentucky around. Like you can have success against their defense. It is a little schematic, but it's also effort. It's also conference play. I mean, these teams know each other so well in conference play that happens to any conference. You could put Kentucky in the SWAC and they would have a close call here or there. I think it's just kind of the nature of college basketball and in conference play. But more impressive to me than instead of focusing on them like having close calls, you'll notice that like every time the game kind of gets close in the last 4 minutes, you'll call your buddy and be like, hey, turn on the Kentucky game. They're about to lose. And then they go on to win by 50.
Right.
That's the part that like sticks out to me is like, oh my God, these guys are not going to lose. So, I think Kentucky's to lose. I do like Virginia. I think Virginia is the second best team. I think Duke has the second best ceiling as far as like if we get all these teams playing their best basketball, I would probably put Duke ahead of Virginia just because.
Does Duke defensively bother you at all?
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, for sure. I've said this about Duke that they could beat Kentucky. They might be better than Kentucky, but they're gonna have. They might not even get to Kentucky because they'll get upset in the second round because they don't play any defense and they shoot too many threes. So Duke at their best is really really good, but at their worst they're also really average. So I don't know. That's going to be really interesting to see. But I think Virginia is the second best team. Like. If Justin Anderson's healthy, I think Virginia is clearly the second best team. I think Kentucky's clearly the best. And then from there, man, it's going to be interesting. I really like Wisconsin. They're kind of on fire right now. They're really efficient. They're impossible to guard.
They really are.
I hope they drop one because people expect them to end up in Kentucky's bracket if they're not a one seed.
Yeah, that would not be fun. but I don't. I don't know. I mean, they are good enough to definitely beat Kentucky. They have five guys who can shoot threes. They put every guy that sees the floor can shoot threes. Every guy that sees the floor can post up. They're just impossible to guard. I mean, sometimes they don't play the best defense. Sometimes they get a little lackadaisical. But when they're locked in defensively, man, they are really good. Arizona's playing well. They've come along. They play great D. They play the pack line. They're big, physical. They can struggle to score sometimes, but it's impossible to blow them out. They're kind of like similar to Virginia in that regard. You're not going to blow them out. They're going to be in every single game. So I like them. And then I also like Villanova a lot. They're kind of my under the radar, which is weird how they're under the radar. They're like 29-2, but they're not on ESPN. They got the contract with Fox, so like they don't. Not a lot of people watch them.
Oh, is that why I've never seen them?
Right, yeah, because your default is just like, what games Virginia's not playing? Let me turn on the game. I'm going to turn on ESPN and see what's on. And it's never Villanova. They're always on Fox Sports 1 or Fox or whatever. And then the other thing, they have no pros. They have, I mean, their best player, Darren Hilliard, he'll probably get drafted somewhere and he'll get a shot. But there's no one you can point to and be like, yeah, that guy will be in the NBA in 3 years. So from those two standpoints, they're kind of flying under the radar-ish, but they are really, really, really good. I like those two guys. And as far as like a surprise team, I don't really know. I haven't really been paying attention much to, I'll say Ohio State.
Yeah. My pick, how's Ohio State doing? I apologize. I haven't been following them.
We are a one-man team. D'Angelo Russell is
unbelievable.
He's unbelievable. He honest to God, might be the best player that Thad Mott has ever had, which is crazy to say, but really skilled. He's very much good enough to do a Shabazz Napier and just throw the team on his back. I don't expect that to happen at all, but he's definitely that good to where he could just, like, single-handedly win games for Ohio State. But, yeah, they're probably going to be like an 8 seed and get thrown in Kentucky's region and get smoked by 15 in the second round.
I think if he, you know, he's so young that if his game matures, when you're talking upside for the NBA, I would just be drooling over D'Angelo Russell if I'm an NBA scout. If he matures a little bit, the possibilities are endless.
It's funny to me how, like, coming into the season, Okafor was the obvious number one, and then, like, Karl Towns has been playing well, so now it's Towns versus Okafor, and it's, like, become that debate because they're both big guys, and it's kind of easy to compare them. And then there's D'Angelo Russell sitting right there that's like, guys, this dude is really good, too.
That's who I'm picking
a lot of drafts. So,
I wouldn't pick Okafor for ACC Player of the Year. So, yeah, for me, he's not my national pick because he doesn't play defense and he can't shoot free throws. And I think you want to be Player of the Year, you got to have a complete game.
I'm just talking about for the NBA. If I'm picking number one, I'm taking D'Angelo Russell, a guy that actually is going to have the ball in his hands and can do what he does for higher volume of the game. And I just think his upside is through the roof. And for your sake, Mark, I hope he carries you through, brother.
I hope so too.
And if you'll carry the torch for us, man, I'll carry the torch for you.
All right, good. Yeah.
All right, let's real quick. I want to do this because I know you have thoughts on a lot of different topics. We don't have time to talk about everything, so I'm just going to throw some player names or some words out there, mostly names, and give me, you know, one word, two words, three words, nothing biggie.
All right.
First one, pack line.
Brick wall.
Nice. Malcolm Brogdon.
Bulldog.
Okay. John Calipari.
Good at what he does.
Oh, I'm sorry. We were looking for snake there. Snake is the answer. Justin Anderson.
Give me a second on that one. There's a lot of things you could say about Justin Anderson.
Yeah. Great.
I mean, great. Yeah, we'll say great.
Nice. That's a good one. Sam Spears.
Underappreciated.
Definitely. He's not even listed on the website.
Right.
All right, and last, Tony Bennett.
Nobody does it better.
Perfect. That's the right answer. You win. This is like one of those lousy game shows where the last round, no matter how poorly you did in the first two, you can still win in the last round.
Good stuff.
You're good. All right, I think we are running out of time. Did you have any final questions there, Mike?
Mark, I just want to thank you, man. Obviously, like you said, you're not doing this to pander to Virginia fans or anybody, but it's nice to have somebody in the media that kind of takes your back when we take the beating that we're taking with guys that really aren't even basketball people. It's nice to have someone that actually knows the game kind of step up and support us. And I just really appreciate it. And thanks a lot for joining us, man. I know that you got a lot going on. This is your Mecca time of the year, so thanks a lot for taking a few minutes to join us.
I appreciate it. No problem. And one final thought that I didn't get a chance to bring up. I was watching that Oklahoma-Iowa State game from a couple – was it probably last week, I think. And Oklahoma's up like 19 at halftime, and then they give up 59 points in the second half and lose at Iowa State. And the entire time I'm watching that, like, you're watching this game and you're hearing them talk about Alon Kruger and Fred Hoiberg have like these NBA up-tempo systems in place. And I thought it was hilarious how that system got Iowa State down by 19 at halftime. That system gave up 59 points in the second half. And I'm sitting there thinking like, man, I wish Virginia fans were watching this game because they would be going nuts at what's happening right now. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Mark, I watched that game, and I don't consider any of that a system. I consider that, run and chuck, and that's.
It's funny to me how you can watch that and then turn around and be like, Tony Bennett is wrong with his approach. And again, like I want to rehash that. Maybe Kruger and Hoiberg aren't wrong necessarily. Like, we don't have to attack their approach, but it's just funny to me how the same people are like, watch that Oklahoma and Iowa State game, and they're like, man, that's how basketball should be played. It was up-tempo. It was so exciting. Did you see 59 points? That was so – and you step back, and I'm watching it like, what? You gave up 59 points? That's so bad. How does that happen? So I thought that was pretty funny. But, before I go, just one more time, Virginia fans, relax. I got your back.
I think that's an important message. We can be a defensive bunch.
I will fight the fight for you guys. But the one tip I would have as a neutral observer to all this is don't necessarily attack the other points of view. Just protect your own. Don't worry about saying the NBA sucks and up-tempo sucks and this sucks and that stuff. Just be like, okay, that could work too, but we really like what we have. So I appreciate you guys having me on. I will definitely – come back on next year when we do it all over again, and I have to defend Virginia again as their preseason number one, and all these college basketball writers want to kill themselves because they come into the season knowing that Virginia's going to be a major player all year again and all that kind of stuff. I'll be happy to do it again as long as they continue to be as efficient and as fun to watch as they are.
Excellent.
Very well put, man.
Excellent, Mark. We really appreciate your time tonight. This has been fun. I think you're I don't know if we've given you all the new followers that we can give you, but hopefully, if they're not following you yet after listening to this, they'll sign right on.
Buy his book, damn it.
Buy my book. I got a family to feed. Come on.
Don't Put Me In, Coach, is the name of the book. Now, you used to run the Club Trillion blog. Explain. Give us the 10-second explanation of what Club Trillion is.
I would sit on the bench, much like Sam Spears. I would come in. I would play 1 minute. I would do nothing while I was out there. So my box score at the end of the game would say 1 minute played, followed by a bunch of zeros. That's a trillion. Me and my buddies at the end of the bench, we decided to turn that into a little club and have fun with it. So that's where Club Trillion comes from. That's where I got the idea for the blog and all that kind of stuff. And that's why if you follow me on Twitter, @ClubTrillion, if that never made any sense to you, maybe now it does. So.
Well, and Virginia fans love the walk-ons. Last year, I think everyone's favorite moment was when Thomas Rogers hit his first and only career three-pointer against Syracuse on senior night. That was like the highlight. I think it was voted the biggest highlight of the year by the fans.
But I will say that the trillion, the desire for the trillion came from like moments like that when I was like a freshman and sophomore and I would get in the game and the fans would go nuts. Like I was like a circus monkey and they wanted me to do something. And then like when you actually make a good play, they go nuts. Like they expected you to trip over your feet. And, like,
I'm surprised he can run.
And I would get like so mad at that because I just had like the biggest ego. I was like a decent player in high school. So like when I came in as a freshman, I'd get so mad at that. And so that's kind of where that came from. I was like, if I go in there, I'm not doing anything. I'm just standing in the corner. Screw that. I'm not letting these people,
Well, yeah, I don't think people realize how good the walk-ons are at basketball, because I used to play pickup games with some of our walk-ons, and those guys, they were big, and they were way better than me.
Oh, I met UVA's walk-ons when I was down there. I talked to them a little bit. They all tower over me. They would school me for sure. Like, yeah, It's always funny how I do play pickup. I've said that about playing pickup. I still live in Columbus. When I play pickup, it's either at the Schottenstein Center with the Ohio State team, and I'm the worst guy on the floor by far, or I play pickup with my buddies, and I'm the best guy on the floor by far, and there's, like, no in-between for me. I can't find a decent game where, like, you know, I got some guys who can play a little bit. And then every time I go play with just regular folks, they're just, like, stunned at how much better I am than what they thought. Again, it's like, what did you expect from me? You thought I'd trip over my feet and, you know, just – I'm lucky to hit the rim. Come on.
Right. Yeah. The walk-ons are not the worst basketball players at the school.
Right. Exactly. Oh.
We definitely take you up on the offer to do it again next year, Mark. This was fun, and I think this is going to be a very popular episode. So I do appreciate it.
Oh, this will likely be our biggest episode yet, man. Might even top the Seth Greenberg episode. Titus is kind of legendary in Virginia circles, and you know, one thing you know now, buddy, if you ever need somewhere to go to get away, you can always get a beer in Charlottesville.
I do know that. My one trip down there, I didn't realize that I was like royalty in Virginia until I went down there, and then that was pretty cool to see. So, yeah, I love the culture of Virginia. I've definitely become a Virginia fan, which I'm probably not allowed to say, but it's true. I'll be cheering for the Hoos this year as long as they don't play Ohio State for sure, so.
Amen, man. Well, we're happy to have you on board. And everyone else, thanks so much for listening. We'd love to get your feedback on Twitter. Obviously, follow Mark Titus. If you don't, where the hell have you been? At Club Trillion. But make sure to shoot us any questions or comments you have. And we have a new guest next week that's great as well. And we hope you join us again next week. So for Mark Titus and Phony Bennett, thank you guys so much for joining the Hard Hedge. And for listening tonight, you guys take care.